Super Friends with Eric Esquivel.
Welcome back to Super Friends, everybody. Today I am joined by Kevin Alvarez. Kevin, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing excellent. I'm really excited that you chose this piece of Superman history to talk about today. It's a little obscure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
I'm happy that you let me pick it. Do you want to introduce it or should I?
I want you to.
Okay, so what we're talking about today is an ad campaign from Amex called The Adventures of Seinfeld and Superman from 2004. It's a series of commercials. Well, calling them commercials, we'll get into it.
Okay. They're short films, man. Let's give them the respect.
They're short films, but what's really interesting is that they're like the first web-only commercials that came out ever, and it's really funny because every article that I found about them, it has they call them webisodes, and they're all in parentheses. That's really
on
cool.
On the World Wide Web, it was like really early on to this kind of stuff. You had to go to a website that was designated for these commercials to watch it.
On the Amex site,
So it's an American Express ad. I guess in 2003, they went online, right?
Yeah.
And they aired once as a big special premiere on the TBS network, like during Seinfeld reruns.
Yes.
And then they aired on TV just all over the place in 2004, the following year.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think they didn't play the full 5-minute ones. They had just had like the smaller spots, and they would use those to get people to the website to watch the longer spots.
And each one was like 5 minutes long, right?
Yeah,
so that's 10 minutes
crazy.
Total. Yeah.
It's crazy too, because 5 minutes for a web video seems like so much now, but just back then it was like so new, no one really knew how to handle this sort of thing.
Yeah, like a 5-minute commercial, and they were directed by Barry Levinson, who directed Rain Man, and Good Morning Vietnam, and stuff, and written and performed by Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah,
and then Patrick Warburton was Superman.
He did Superman,
so he went on to play the Tick and Brock Sampson in the Venture Brothers.
Yeah,
but he's a great Superman. I loved his take on it.
He's so pompous. He's amazing.
And it felt like an episode of Seinfeld just with Superman. They're just very mundane episodes. So the first one is about them. They're just hanging out, and he's like buying a surround sound stereo.
Yeah, right? they're hanging out. They go to a diner, and it's great because Superman makes a reservation to the diner, and they have that whole opening scene where it's he's like, "Yeah, is there a reservation for Superman?" And he's like, "No, Superman." He's like, "Try Man of Steel," and then Jerry Seinfeld gives him shit. He's like, "Really? Why'd you do that?" And he's like, "Well, do you want to sit by the kitchen?"
Yeah, I looked at his last name is Superman Man of Steel.
Yeah, Superman Man of Steel. I was thinking about it. I was like, I feel like this version of Superman, it's like. It's a version where there is no Clark Kent. It's like only Superman, just like chilling, walking on the street, having a normal day.
Yeah, because Jerry knows about Ma and Pa Kent, and he talks about it later on. He's like, "Did you name yourself Superman?"
Yeah,
because
Ma
and Pa didn't call you that. I've met those guys; they're pretty humble Midwest folks. And he's like, "Don't worry about it."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, did you try anything else? Like, really awesome, man. He like starts pitching ideas for alternative names. It just feels like Kramer. It just feels like this weird, like slightly magical realist character.
I was trying to pinpoint like who in like the character list of Seinfeld is he. I think I landed on Kramer. I was like between George and Kramer, but I feel like George is just like too neurotic, and this Superman isn't that. He's very confident.
Yeah, and it's funny because it does feel sort of improv-y, but you know that it's not because it's a cartoon.
Yeah,
and there's like special effects and stuff, but the writing style is so like. Mumblecore before mumblecore.
Yeah.
You know, like not, there aren't meteors crashing and stuff. They're just talking about installing stereos. And
Yeah.
It's
and
really
it's
fun.
Great because then they have those moments where Superman just can't do the stuff. He like locks the keys in the car. He can't set up the stereo right.
Yeah. They focus on the man part of Superman.
Yeah.
So the first 5-minute film is called A Uniform Used to Mean Something.
Yeah.
And in that one, Jerry Seinfeld gets robbed.
Yeah, someone robs his DVD player.
And he's standing right next to Superman.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole joke is about. He's like, "I'm right here. This costume, I made it as bright as I possibly could." He's like, he feels disrespected and chases him down. And he confronts the burglar, and the burglar throws the DVD player at him. And instead of catching it, he puffs his chest
he
out.
He puffs his chest
and
out.
And the thing gets destroyed.
Yeah.
And Jerry's like, "Why did you do that? Why can't you just catch it?" Like, the whole rest of the film is about that. Like, it's pretty funny.
It's great, too, because when they're in the diner, the guy comes up to him. He's like, "I'm Barry Katz. You saved me from this crane." And they bring that back up later in the second, 5-minute video. It's kind of funny. There's just like this little continuity in these things.
So there's that celebrity thing that Seinfeld has access to because that's his real life. So Superman has that in this world too, and people keep walking up to him and being like, "You remember me from Vietnam?" And he's like, "Oh, sure," and he doesn't. And it's really funny that he has like all these followers, like celebrity style.
Yeah, it's funny. And Seinfeld gets asked for autographs, but they ask Superman to bend bars of steel. just bend this for my kid, please.
Yeah. It's amazing. And I like that Superman's very hokey in this, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're walking by an ad for a new play called Wyoming.
Yeah.
And he's like, "That looks great," because he's so, like, Midwest and folksy. And
yeah.
Jerry makes fun of him. He's like, "Yeah, I don't want to watch that." He's like, "But look at the reviews by Joe Siegel," which is an homage to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Yeah.
And it's great, too, because that review just says, "It's one song after another." It's not even a review. And it's great, too. He goes after the guy, the burglar who stole Jerry's DVD player. And in the middle of flight, he stops to read more reviews. And Jerry yells at him, too, like, "Go save his DVD player.
Stop reading reviews."
Yeah.
I can't do a Seinfeld. Can you do a Seinfeld impersonation?
My Seinfeld's, "Stop reading reviews." Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You nailed it. That's perfect.
It's terrible.
I love it. Yeah. People love Seinfeld, and Seinfeld loves Superman.
Yeah.
There was an urban myth that every episode of Seinfeld contained a reference, and that's not true, but it's pretty close. Almost every episode has either the Superman S, which is on the refrigerator on a magnet, or his bookcase has a statue.
That statue, yeah.
Or he'll just make reference to it. Like, there's a whole episode in Seinfeld where they had the Bizarro versions of themselves. They reference Bizarro, and they make a lot of, like, analogies to, like, actual issues of the comic, and that's really fun.
Yeah, it's cool how much of a Superman fan he is. And just, he's a nerd. He's one of us.
Yeah. And this is pre-Big Bang Theory, where it was, like, marketable to be a comic book nerd.
Yeah.
And so having that in there was very, like, culturally relevant. It was very, like, important to nerd people that we had representation on the most popular show on the air.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that. Because now I think about it, like, you think about Big Bang Theory, and now it's like, those aren't real nerds. Those are, like, caricatures of nerds most of the time. I don't know.
Yeah, well, in that show, the joke is that they read comics.
Yeah.
And in Seinfeld, the joke is that he actually made jokes that were supported by continuity, where, like, the idea of Bizarro.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really funny idea to have, like, real-life Bizarros, and like, the way that he was framing his reality through comics was sort of Scott Pilgrim-esque.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, things that happen that are mundane, you make special in your head because of your cultural impact that the comics made on you. So, it's pre-Scott Pilgrim and pre-Big Bang Theory and pre all, like, the nerdcore wannabe stuff, like the nerdist bullshit. Yeah, I really like these a lot. And the second one was called Hindsight is 2020.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something funny to me about that one. That was almost a pilot for what?
For comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah.
But it's Superman and Seinfeld taking a road trip.
Yeah,
in a little buggy.
But it's the exact same model. And they even talk about the car breaks down like it does in that show, because Superman locks the keys in the car.
Yeah. And it's great, too, because they're on a road trip, I think, from New York to Los Angeles, and they have suitcases. And you can tell which one is Superman because it's animated, too. Everything in these things is in these videos is just like real life, except for Superman. He's the only one that's animated in his suitcase.
It's like Roger Rabbit style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I really like that they're talking about how hard it is to break walnuts for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Superman's like, "It's just impossible. There's no crease on this one." Like,
yeah, everyone has that problem.
Yeah, it's very relatable. And there's a cameo. At one point, they stop to go look at the Grand Canyon, right? They're in Arizona.
Yeah.
And they ask a lady to take their photo in front of the Grand Canyon, and she won't stop raving about Green Lantern.
How much she loves Green Lantern, or is she trying to take their photo?
Yeah, and she's like, "He saved my boy one time. Have you ever met Green Lantern? Isn't it amazing how that green beam just..." It's so funny.
It's so good. And then, they just keep shitting on Green Lantern. They have that... every time he calls, Superman's like, "I'm not here."
And a lady looks over and laughs while she's making these comparisons to Green Lantern, and that's Noelle Neal, who played Lois Lane in the black and white.
That's
Superman.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the one who's kind of like snickering. It's little Lois Lane. It's exciting.
That's awesome.
I love that Jerry Seinfeld had the power to kind of do anything in the 90s.
Yeah.
And what he chose to do was like write Superman. However he could. I know they offered American Express commercials, and he's like, "All right, can I put Superman in this?" Like, what else did he pitch Superman putting into for his career? You know, like, whenever they came for a new, like, shoe endorsement or Snickers commercial, was he like, "I want to put Superman in there"? Like,
yeah, me and Superman are going to eat this chocolate.
Yeah, it's really great. Are you a fan of that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, the new stuff?
You know, I haven't watched a whole lot of it. the ones I do watch, I really enjoy. Like, I watched with him and Obama, and I thought it was, like, really amazing.
I really like that Seinfeld brand of, like, taking people that are extraordinary, like a Superman or like an Obama, and then, like, just eating lunch with them or, like, going on a field trip or a road trip.
Yeah, and it's funny because that's totally his style. It's just, like, these big things in these ordinary situations.
Yeah, because the more modern comedians that are, like, Jerry Seinfeld level are kind of rock star-esque. Like, you see guys like Dane Cook, and they dress like Chris Angel, and they have, like, pyrotechnics, and, like, they, or even, like, Kevin Hart. It's a big, like, production, and, like, Seinfeld's just this nerd, and I think there's something about that that's really compelling, where he, like, brings everyone down to this human-based level, because that's what funny is, right? Like, it's not funny to be above other people or to be, like, larger than life. What's funny is, like, the mundane aspects of what's the deal with this 2-in-1 shampoo? Like, that's kind of where he's at intellectually.
Yeah, it's true. I think his comedy is, like, he's very much the observer and, like, always, like, questioning things. And I think, like, that I feel like that's why it works really well.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, totally. And Patrick Warburton is the man. Do you watch The Venture Brothers?
No, I've never watched it.
Ah, it's so good. Do you watch The Tick?
I've watched The Tick.
So he's pretty good. I like the campy kind of stuff that he does. Clearly he has like a superhero connection.
Yeah, he very much is that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So why were you drawn to these episodes? I know in your Clark Kent life, you're an ad guy, right?
Yeah. I just started working in advertising like a little less than a year ago. It was like the first job out of college. And I find it really fascinating because there's just, it's like movies. Like there's just so much happening behind the scenes. And it's kind of, it's really amazing. But I think the big difference is, like, versus movies, you know, you're telling a story in a similar way. But I think with ads, you are trying to sell something, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it is. But it's like, how do you sell chapstick? Like, all chapstick does the same thing. So you have to find, like, really, really creative ways to make your chapstick different, right?
Right, right.
And I find that fascinating. Just, like, the people just, like, who work in advertising look at something and they're like, well, how do we make this different? What is different about this? And you know, really capturing that and taking it to the next level.
And in this campaign, the idea was that American Express can do things that Superman can't.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so Superman was trying to recover that DVD player and it was broken and he couldn't repair it except by reversing the time. He was like, I have to fly around the whole planet. But in American Express, you're covered for theft.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That was the whole thing, was that, like, it's more powerful than Superman.
Yeah, you can pay for Lois Lane's groceries.
And these are commercials that you and I are talking about, like, what, 15 years later?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really impactful and really powerful. It's interesting because, like, you and I both live in L.A., so it's the entertainment capital of the world, and you work in advertising here. Advertising is the most honest version of the entertainment industry. Like, you admit that you're trying to sell something.
Yeah.
You admit that your goal is money.
Yeah.
But you can fuse that with writing and performance and make it very clever, like these Superman ads.
Yeah.
Because comics, really, like, they were cheap initially because they were made to trick retarded kids into buying, like, gum ads, right? Like, comics were delivery systems
for advertising.
So, like, that's what Superman always is. So to say that this would be beneath a Man of Steel or beneath a comic would be inaccurate. This is as valid as the comic you're reading that has ads in it for Charles Atlas, like, stuff. So
yeah, totally. And exactly. Even now, it's like, comic books are still full of ads.
Yeah, they're $4 and $5 and they're still chock full of Honda ads and stuff. This podcast has ads in it. They'll be coming up later on. It should have been my segue. Man.
Dang it.
Yeah. So advertising is really interesting in that way that I think some people kind of like look down on it. But it's a valid art form, and if you do it well, you can impact folks for decades later. What are you working on that you're into over there?
Can you talk about that? I can talk a little bit about it.
So where do you work?
I work at an advertising agency called RPA out in Santa Monica, and we work on stuff like some clients we have are Honda, Farmers, AMPM. I always think of those because those clients really let us get away with a lot.
Oh, really?
So, like, AMPM right now, the mascot is this, like, big dude. It's like an ogre-esque fella made of snacks. There's this guy made of snacks, and he just, like, walks around. And he's like, oh, I'm Doomguss. I do this. And he's got, like, a really interesting voice. He you know, he's just this character we made for that company, and they really like it, and we get to do some interesting stuff with him.
That's cool. It's interesting to me, being, like, a big writer nerd. how story impacts people so intensely. And like when you create a character and you define a narrative around a brand, it stays with you. Like human beings are just wired for story.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You can weaponize that.
Yeah, I've heard
make them go fight a war with Uncle Sam. You can make them be nice to each other with Superman. You can make them buy car insurance with a Geico gecko.
Yeah,
if you
exactly.
put mythology in something, you can galvanize millions of people to do what you want them to do. And that's really interesting, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And right now I'm going to school to write ads. Mm-hmm. I'm like taking some night classes. And the big thing they tell you about is like in everything, every sort of thing, every sort of advertising you make, really like try your best. Like the goal is to find, to make an emotional connection with this product mm-hmm. for people to have, mm-hmm. right? And I've heard things like people will remember like a grocery list better if you like tell it as a story.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You, this is why we need eggs and blah, blah, blah. You could get into it mm-hmm. versus just giving them the bare bones list.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like story is powerful.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting that so culturally when people found out that story is powerful and advertising is powerful, there was some backlash, right? Like people kind of don't like ad men anymore. But if you read the like early stuff, like David Ogilvy, you a fan of that guy?
Yeah.
So he used to talk about how like he was super against billboards that were outside highways because car crashes increased by like 13% or something. And he was like, we're actively choosing to kill people by putting cigarette ads up on these like billboards. So you have to like have ethics with advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you find people are very conscious of still?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like especially my agency is really good about it. We're having like workshops on like what's legal, what's pushing the envelope too much.
Yeah.
And like, and just always keeping people in mind.
No more Joe Camel.
No, no more.
For the kids.
What? Kids aren't supposed to smoke.
I just passed this ad outside that is they have a campaign going for, I think it's Michelob or something.
Uh-huh.
And it's some beer company. And as you're walking by, it's friends toasting beer. And it says Live Ultra. But as you walk by, it's like a hologram ad. So it switches to them all on treadmills running. So it's the night of them partying and the morning of them running. But it's really quick the way it's designed. So it's like a subliminal advertisement. So you think that drinking their beer is healthy.
Yeah.
And it's not like a diet beer or like an exercise beer. It's just... Yeah, it's super unethical, evil James Bond villain nonsense.
Exactly. Beer is just carbs. Liquid carbs. It's like each beer is like a loaf of bread or something.
And in these commercials, it wasn't very, it didn't overcome the story that he used in American Express Card.
That's what I was going to say next. That was what was really nice about it was that they didn't feel like a commercial. Like the whole, like, solving your problem with American Express, each time was maybe like 5 seconds of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they didn't wink at it in like a cynical way either. Like if you watch 30 Rock, which I love, they talk a lot about the in story advertising, like, oh, this new Snapple, and they like kind of dicks about it
because
they want to make fun of the man for making him do that. But in these shorts, it's not cynical.
No, like, not at all.
It's just part of life.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Or like that scene in Wayne's World where he's like pulling up the Doritos. He's like, well, yeah, advertising is terrible. And he's eating the Doritos, just showing it to the audience.
Yeah, there's a large legacy of this in Superman. You know, like Marlboro, the cigarette company, advertised in Superman 1 and 2. So much so, they gave $33,000 for number 2. And there's like cigarette trucks all throughout the fight scene in Superman 2 that don't exist in reality. Because in reality, you don't mark those trucks because they would get robbed. So there's actually a congressional hearing where they looked at advertising smoking to kids because of Superman.
Yeah.
So there's a long legacy of ads in the Superman franchise.
That's crazy.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I'm excited that you want to talk about these. There's just 10 minutes of content, which is really funny.
Yeah.
But you and I both remembered it so vividly. So where were you when you first saw these commercials?
I was researching for this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think I might have been too young to like remember.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
Gotcha.
So in 2003, 2004, I was like in third grade.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So I was 8. I was playing Zelda, and I was playing Majora's Mask, but I was getting very frustrated because I couldn't figure out how to change Link into human form. So that's where I was at.
Were you a Superman kid?
You know what? I wasn't. The first comic I read was like a Dexter's Laboratory comic book.
It was DC, though. That counts kind
of. Yeah, I count it because it came with a promise from my dad. He's like, we're going to go to a comic book store every month and buy comics for you and your sister. And I'm
dope.
And then we never did it again.
Aw, dads.
I know, dads. He's a great guy. But I was like, no, dad, you promised me. But I didn't get back into comics until I was like in middle school, and it was when sometime after like Civil War had come out. I was reading like
the Marvel book.
Yeah, I was reading Amazing Spider-Man, like all of those. Like
I like the red and blue guys too. I'm also a fan. Optimus Prime, Spider-Man, Superman. That's where it's at.
Definitely.
That's cool. So you're a comic book writer too, though.
Yes.
That's you kind of just started getting into the comic world.
Super duper new. I used to, I'd always wanted to do it, and I used to do these like Skype sessions with storyboard artist Jesse Moynihan, whom I'm a big fan of. We were talking about him earlier.
Really talented.
And we used to do these Skype sessions, and I was like, I would make these like comics really, really fast so I could like have something to show them. And then we would just talk about them, but they were really terrible. Like this one comic I drew was just this guy. He's like hiking. He's like walking down like some path, and I can't draw, so they're very poorly drawn. And then he's just like, "I know you're watching me. I don't know who you are, but I know you see me. Do you like this?" And he just like poops in the middle of the road, and he's like, "Is this what you want?" And then I showed it to him. He's like, "All right, this is pretty funny. But let's talk about it, and let's like." Who is this character? And I was like, I don't know, just some guy. And he's like, well, you got to really think about that. Who is this character? What is he doing in the next page after this? It was just like, it was like nine panels. He's like, what is he doing before this? Like, you got to really think these things out. And I think that was like the first, like lesson in writing I ever got. So I was like, cool.
That's cool putting it in context. I like when people regard things that are very silly, very seriously.
Yeah.
Like, all right, so this pooping comic, let's get down to brass tacks about how to really execute this pooping comic. Like that makes me really happy.
Yeah. And it stuck with me. Now I think about it all the time. I'm like, okay, character first. Mm-hmm. And that's what comics are. Like that's what you're selling ultimately is in any sort of whatever form Superman takes. If it's on a shampoo, like a kid will buy it because it's Superman, you know? Like,
yeah, if it feels consistent, right?
Yeah.
And it felt consistent in these ads because he was still like the kind of down-home G-shucks nice guy. He's helping Jerry Seinfeld set up his cable.
Yeah.
Like, that's of course Superman would help you set up your cable.
That's a good friend. Yeah. Even though he's like very pompous and like really ridiculous, he's still, I think at the core, he's still Superman.
Yeah. So let's pitch, if DC offered you any character to write for a new ad campaign.
Oh, man.
For a product. What is your pie in the sky? Like, what's the first thing you think of?
Like
Catwoman D flea collars.
Oh, man. Can you answer first? I need a second.
Oh, man. I mean, Booster Gold would be a good, like, American
Booster
Express
Gold
card.
Would be good, yeah.
Huh, let's see. Mr. Freeze ice cube trays.
Yeah. I'm at a loss. Like Blue Beetle, like wireless headphones.
You showed me your new ones earlier today.
Yeah. They're so fresh on my mind.
It's funny because you said you weren't a big comic guy, but you know Blue Beetle. So that's
funny.
He's like a D-list character.
Yeah, I was...
Ted Kord. You like the Ted Kord one or the Jaime Hernandez?
Reyes.
I was thinking of the artist. I was like, what?
Yeah, well... he was really great. I loved his character in Young Justice. I was like, whoa, he's so interesting. I didn't know who he was. And then like summer before college, I like moved and like had no friends in the area I was at. And so there was just this comic book store that was there. And I would read Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Okay.
Because I loved Under the Hood, that Batman arc.
By Judd Winnick.
Yeah. And who was on The Real World? You know that?
It was
crazy. He's got a crazy story.
And
Blue Beetle, and then just like whatever like indie comics I could get my hands on.
All the color stuff. You're like Red Hood, Blue Beetle,
yeah.
Green Arrow.
Love Green Arrow.
That's cool.
Yeah, The Flash. A good product for The Flash, like a router. Like internet
like a modem? Yeah. Oh man, you just nailed it. All right, well, speaking of ads, let's take a quick break for these ads and we'll be right back. And we're back. So which Superman comics do you like? I know you like the character.
Yeah, I love the character. My favorite one ever is I can't think of the name. Superman for All Seasons.
Oh, that's so good.
It's a great one. I love
Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Yep, they're rock stars.
Yeah.
All-Star Superman. I really, 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 really love Earth One.
Oh, yeah. Really? Why are you that into that book? That's awesome.
Because it's that, like, real Superman, like putting him in, like, really, like, a really, in a really grounded state. Mm-hmm. and then exploring like how dark that is. Like there's just, I remember he like, man, it's been such a long time since I read it, but he like can't have sex with someone because he feels like he might kill them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I guess I never thought about that. Like, what are the realities of like, of being Superman at that level?
That's funny. A few times in this podcast, you've mentioned like the grounded aspect of Superman, and also you're like, in the Seinfeld cartoons that we would just watch, there's no Clark Kent. So are you really into the Clark Kent aspect? Is that your access point to the Superman mythos, is Clark Kent?
I think so.
That's great. Let's talk about that more, because I think that's less common than folks that are like, I wish that I could squeeze coal into a diamond. I wish that I could like punch a polar bear. Clark Kent is really important to me. Why is he important to you?
I think what I like about him, and I know you guys have talked about this before in the podcast, but like he is, his story is the immigrant story, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's from somewhere else. He's an alien. He comes to Earth. He lives in Smallville, and just, you know, he learns to, he's always looking for his place. You know, he's adopted. Mm-hmm. And where that relates to me personally is my parents are both immigrants from El Salvador, and they came here in like the, I want to say early 80s. Mm. They were super young, so they were able to assimilate pretty well. But like, I'm like white as heck. Like, you can't tell like I'm any sort of Hispanic.
I have the same thing.
So you understand. So it's like whenever that comes up, I have to like, I feel like I have to prove.
Yeah,
that I'm.
That's part of every Latino culture, I think, is the checking and like proving and all that stuff. Even like the idea of assimilating is sort of nonsense, right?
Because
the first immigrants who came here from Europe did not assimilate
at
all.
They're like, they this is become, our land now.
Yeah, yeah. There was no attempt to assimilate. So why is any other kind of immigrant expected to do the same thing?
It's
pretty weird. But Clark Kent does a little bit.
Yeah, he does.
I guess, like, let's talk about that, the immigrant experience through Clark Kent, because he doesn't really know he's from somewhere else until later on. Like, he doesn't know he's Kryptonian until he's, like, in his teens, right? So did you, early on, were you in touch with your roots?
Like, no.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same thing. Like, my parents grew up here, and, like, at home, they didn't speak Spanish.
They grew up in California?
Yeah, they grew up in L.A., and they, like I said, assimilated very quickly. But, like, this sort of became their culture more than, like, I feel like they had the first-generation experience, where technically I'm first-generation, but they had that experience, so I feel like I'm more second-generation. Mm-hmm. And, like, relating that to Superman, like, I always thought, like, I was just, like, part of the group, like, just American, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it wasn't until later where I started realizing, like, oh, I'm like so much more because of my heritage, my roots.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's exactly what like Clark feels.
And that's such an iconically American thing, which is why it's exciting to have that in the most American superhero of all time.
Yeah.
I think that's the arc of being young, right? Is when you're young, you think everyone's the same and just like you because you're the best. And like, it's just whatever your default is how you perceive the world. That's kind of all your mind can wrap itself around.
Yeah.
And as you get older, you see yourself in the context of history. So you see where your parents are from and where your friends are from. And you get really interested in like, in that and the continuity of our civilization and of history. And like, Clark had to do that because his powers manifested.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that you passed for white. And like, I know that experience very well, but your name is Alvarez.
Yeah.
So was there any kind of checking there culturally? Like, was there any sort of stuff in your mind that sticks out when you're a kid where you the other side of you was important or called into question?
Yes, I know I've had those experiences. There's none that like come to mind immediately. Mm-hmm. I feel like my family, it's happened a lot where like I've had relatives who like I don't know very well and I haven't seen in years since I was like a baby. Mm-hmm. But they all know me because I was like the palest one in our tribe. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Nice to see you again. But like, I don't remember them. It was like my first time meeting them.
That's funny. And you're not a biracial guy though. You said your mom and your dad are both from El Salvador.
Yeah.
It just happened that you're the palest guy.
I got the pale genes.
Because the idea of like what a Hispanic or a Latino person is always like super different from reality too. Like,
yeah.
I know folks from Spain who are like whiter than folks who are from England.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, it doesn't really look like any, like it's, you know, there's such a wide spectrum of people.
It's such a hodgepodge and there's so much and it's hard to, it's interesting because like I like how when shows or movies movies go back to Krypton, mm-hmm. like it's sort of the same. It's like there is no homogeneity most of the time. Like I think in the new show they do have like African American characters who are on Krypton, which I find interesting. It's like cool. There's people of color on Krypton.
Yeah, yeah.
But like in our minds, we see them and they're just Kryptonians. Mm-hmm. Like in this context.
That's a funny American way to say that too. To say African American Kryptonian. Yeah. They're not from Africa America. They're just black guys.
They have a lot of melatonin.
Yeah. They're black people and brown people and white people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're all Kryptonian. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really funny. Yeah, Clark Kent is interesting. They never tap that aspect of him where he passes for human.
Yeah.
I would love to have humans or aliens that were like orange, like Starfire.
Yeah.
Talking about how she can't have the experience that Clark has because her hair is made of living energy and she's orange.
Yeah, that's true.
And like Clark can just go have a job at the Daily Planet and pass for human and pass for white, but other aliens can't do that. And, yeah. and there's never a tension. And I would love someone to call him out on that. It would be so interesting.
Did Clark go to college?
There's different continuities, as you mentioned, but yeah. the one that I hold dear to is that he didn't. I like the idea that, like, in Birthright and in the Lois and Clark 90s TV show,
yeah.
he just traveled the world.
Oh,
it was more
okay.
important to him to see everywhere and do everything. So in the 90s, that was when I grew up, and that's what I adhere to still, is
okay.
that he was just a man of the world.
I like that a lot. Because I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, did he just, like, go from Smallville to get a job in Metropolis?
That'd be kind of a small life, right?
Like that's true.
In the Birthright comic, he goes to Africa because it was the country that he thought could use a Superman the most.
Mm-hmm.
And he traveled and wrote stories and engaged with many different cultures. And there's many different countries
yeah.
there. So he felt like he could really kind of spread his wings. And then in the 90s Lois and Clark show, they make a point of showing him when he arrives at the planet that he has this suitcase that has all these stickers on it that have different countries. And
oh, that's cool.
Whenever like Perry White is going to have a heart attack and he like mixes up some roots and he's like, I learned this remedy in Tibet, or I made this dish in Ghana. And he's like a very worldly guy. So it's more than just American. It's like a citizen of the planet. And I like that aspect of him.
That's cool. I've read Birthright, but I guess it was so long ago. I don't remember that. But that's awesome.
Do you remember the scene of him like flying over the zebras as Clark Kent? I like that a lot.
It's like vague. I feel like if I see it, I'll definitely be like, yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah, yeah. They talk about Africa a lot and that was fun. But I would love to do like a new series where it's young Clark Kent right after high school traveling just the whole entire world.
Yeah.
Like going to Mexico for the Day of the Dead and talking about Krypton and all the people that he's lost there and going to like Asia. And like, I'd love to do like a Batman Begins style story.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. I feel like they sort of touch on that in like Man of Steel. Like he's traveling around.
Yeah, yeah. He walks America in that, right?
Most, yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's anywhere else.
No, I think it is mostly America.
Yeah, so he like...
He's like on an oil rig and...
He was a waiter at a bar and
yeah.
he messed some guy's truck up.
He's like, just like us.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like us. He has a beard.
Just like
glasses.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting character for sure. So Clark Kent, the human aspect is what draws you to the guy.
Yeah.
So if you... the human Kevin had Superman powers, how would you apply them?
See, I always joke about that. I'm like, yeah, if I had superpowers, like, I wouldn't be a superhero. I would just make things more convenient for me. Which is, I guess, is good. I don't have superpowers. I would ignore the higher calling.
Oh, man.
Then
your uncle would die or something. Something would be called into question.
someone has to die. I would love to have... Well, I guess Superman doesn't have telekinesis, but... If I could, that would be my ideal power, or like teleportation. Just be like, oh, all right, I gotta go to work, and like roll off my bed into a portal and then just be at my desk.
I like Clark Kent as a reporter. Could Clark Kent have your job? Do you think that he could be an ad man?
He's a writer, so yeah, he definitely could.
What would his life be like? Do you think that he'd have any moral hangups with that, or anything that would make him be really good at that job?
Yeah, he could, you know, it definitely takes a worldly person, an understanding of people,
mm-hmm.
to write ads. I definitely think he'd be good at it. He's good at connecting with people. He mm-hmm. knows what drives them and how to inspire them.
Yeah,
he could use that and be like, "Hey, you know, I inspire people to buy some chapstick."
I love that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you like the Lex character at all?
Oh, good question. I think he's a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I relate to him as much,
mm-hmm.
But I do like that his great power is that he is so smart. I do sometimes feel, though, that like that gets like Superman's intellect gets underplayed because Lex is so smart.
I agree.
Because there are so many stories where Superman is just like, he's like doing research in his lab in the Fortress of Solitude. And, mm-hmm. and like, make, like he makes that, what is it, that concoction that like gives Lois superpowers for like a day.
Yeah, an all-star, yeah.
Yeah, an all-star. And I'm like, that's a smart dude. Like, that's not...
I feel like that with Batman, too. I loathe that they're in the same universe because it makes people compare them all the time.
Yeah.
You have to have them fight, and like having Batman be smart is his only quality. So then you have to make Clark not smart. It's the way that, like, if Clark is in a room with the Flash, suddenly he's slow. If he's in a room with Batman, suddenly he's dumb. If he's in a room with Wonder Woman, suddenly he's like a not compassionate lunkhead.
Yeah.
Like whatever qualities he has in spades, they have to dumb down and give to somebody else. So the Justice League kind of ruins him to me. I like him by himself.
Yeah.
Like in a world alone. And it makes it feel more lonely then too. If he's the only one with powers like him that
yeah.
he can't connect, I sort of feel like that's an intrinsic part of the Superman character, that isolation.
I 100% agree. And that's, I think, one of my favorite parts about him. Like, Superman Earth One is all about him being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just can't find anyone to relate to at all.
Yeah.
And all, and not just that, not just his heritage, but just in every way he lives in that story.
He needs Jerry Seinfeld, his pal,
yeah,
to come over.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, Jerry's superpower is his credit card. I'm like, he's just Batman or like Iron Man.
Yeah, just being a rich guy.
Yeah, he's just being a rich guy.
I was bummed there were no villain cameos in these two short films.
Oh, that's
true.
If
you could see Jerry Seinfeld square off against a villain, who would you want to see Jerry take on?
maybe Bizarro.
Bizarro's pretty good.
Yeah, just like, can he make friends with him?
I think pointing out the logical fallacies in Bizarro would be fun for Jerry.
Oh yeah.
Like, why aren't you a woman? Why don't you breathe water? Why aren't you whatever ethnicity is the opposite of white? Why aren't you?
Yeah.
Why don't you walk backwards?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Like, how much of an opposite Superman are you, really?
Yeah, yeah. You're just sort of, like, left to center Superman. You're not really opposite. Or, like, if Mrs. Piddalick shows up and Clark's having trouble,
yeah,
like, coming up with schemes, you could get Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld to, like, just pitch him stories or pitch him ideas for how to make him say Mrs. Piddalick backwards.
Yeah, and it's great, too, because, oh, man, there were just, like in all Seinfeld episodes, it's, like, one thing leads to the next thing. They're all sort of, all these plots domino in each other, and I would love to see what that like climax looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Jerry's DVD player comes back into play, like at the end.
It's Brainiac. Yeah, it becomes Brainiac because they hooked it up wrong.
Yeah,
and it's hooked up to the internet now, and it absorbs all knowledge. We should write a fan web comic where it's Jerry, which is the continuing adventures
oh,
of Jerry
yes.
Seinfeld and Clark Kent.
I mean,
keep it going.
Yeah, and it'll be all kinds of products. So not just American Express.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So if you could pair up a modern day comedian with a superhero for this type of ad, who would you pick from the modern pantheon of people?
The modern pantheon and a superhero. Oh, man.
I want Key and Peele to hang out with Booster Gold and Blue Beetle.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think Amy Schumer and Wonder Woman would be pretty good.
What could
they advertise? Spanx.
Spanx. I think they would just do movies together.
Yeah, I'd watch
they,
all
I
of
feel
those.
Like they would have. They would just. They would have such a great dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
They just do more shows.
Sure, sure. I think Carlos Mencia and Brainiac, because it's like Mind of Mencia, and it
yeah.
could be like a Brainiac. No, it's dumb. No, it doesn't work.
There's something there.
There isn't. You're kind, but no, there isn't. Give me one. I did a bad one. It's your turn. Bad pitch.
Okay, I'm gonna say like Teenage Spider-Man and Dimitri Martin.
I don't even know Dimitri Martin. Who is that? Our podcast producer is shaking her head right now. She's really into this.
He's like, or do you know like Stephen Wright?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's sort of like that.
Okay.
So let's do Stephen Wright. Stephen Wright and like witty Spider-Man.
All right. What are they selling?
Joke books.
Joke books?
Like,
okay,
or
that's
like,
good.
Yeah. Like Mad Libs, but just really terrible.
Like just like Sudoku.
Yeah, Sudoku.
How about let's do Andy Dick and the Elongated Man.
Oh, that's
for
a good one.
Viagra.
Yeah, perfect.
That's low hanging fruit. That's pretty easy. Anything else?
Okay, Plastic Man and there's gotta be something.
And Dane Cook.
Oh, you know, or like who's that guy? Lewis Black and Hulk? They're like always.
Oh, right? That's a great one.
Yeah.
For some sort of like heart medication.
Yeah.
Some like blood pressure lowering thing.
Yeah, or whiskey. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Just Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Louis C.K. and the Invisible Woman.
Oh, no.
For sexual harassment.
Yeah, yeah.
Seminars.
Seminars. Like, please stop.
What am I, invisible? I told you no. Yeah. That's the whole commercial.
See, I was thinking of something like that, but I was like, what hero could he possibly go with? Wonder Woman and O.J. Simpson. She uses her lasso of truth.
Oh, that's pretty good. Is he a comedian, though?
No.
He's just a celebrity. That counts. That counts. Celebrities count.
I'm doing my best, Eric. I don't know what else you want from me.
You're doing great, buddy. You're doing great. Do you remember the Sandman who had that gun that put people to sleep? Remember that, like the Golden Age Sandman? I guess him and Bill Cosby.
Oh, no.
That'd be pretty good. For NyQuil. They could do NyQuil ads. Like, it has all kinds of uses. All right. That's it. This game is over. Our podcast producer is pulling out a gun right now.
He's like, stop with these sexual harassing comedians.
We're done. We're done. So, yeah, this is pretty great. Superman
and the comedy.
And the comedy scene. Do you think Superman would be funny?
You know, Jerry and George have talked about this on Seinfeld.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
They were like, Jerry was saying Seinfeld has a super, he's definitely funny. He's got a super sense of humor. He's got super everything, super breath, right?
I think when you grow up as an outsider, it makes you have to have a comedic sort of outlook, or else you'll die.
Yeah.
So maybe he would find the cultural inconsistency among Earthlings to be funny. He would point out things that are weird amongst us.
Yeah.
Like, you guys say you love justice, but...
And he's a journalist. Like, he's got to be kind of like... Oh, my God, I can't speak. He's got to be interesting, like an interesting writer.
Sure,
he's
gotta
be able to pull you in and, like, want...
I kind of like the idea that he's a bad journalist. I like the idea that, like, he would choose to do the one thing he couldn't cheat at.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how fast you can fly, you can't, like... outright Lois Lane. I think that'd be kind of funny.
That's true.
Like,
do you think terrible. He's funny?
I don't know, because it's such a defense mechanism, and for a guy who doesn't need defenses, I don't know, but Clark Kent certainly does. Like, Clark Kent would try to ingratiate himself with people, and also Clark would try to defuse situations without violence. So cracking a joke at your own expense to a bully to make them not beat you up,
They
don't break their hand on your jaw, might be something he would need to develop.
Yeah.
But I would do a story where he had to go learn it from Plastic Man or something.
Do you think he has like a super sense of humor? Like he's smart because of like his powers, right? He can like think faster.
Oh, he'd be quick like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
He'd be like just pitching you stuff. Like,
yeah.
In the comics, he only tells jokes that are like, it's like physical comedy. Do you know Steve Lombard?
Yeah.
So like Steve Lombard will try to set him up with stuff. Like he'll put a bucket of water on top of a door so that when he opens it, it'll fall on him. And Clark will walk through and he'll like blow up a gust of air so it doesn't fall. And then he'll have it fall on Steve instead. Or he'll like hot foot him with his heat vision. He's sort of just like a physical prank guy, like Chevy Chase style.
He's a slapstick guy.
Yeah. He might be really into like National Lampoon or something.
Yeah, him and Jim Carrey could do something.
Yeah. And I think
that's too much slapstick. It's too much physicality.
I think slapstick would be ultra taboo to Clark because he could never do physical stuff because he would just break a building or like smash your hand. So he'd think it was extra funny because he couldn't do it himself.
Well, here's the thing. Did those guys really hurt themselves?
I don't know. They risked it. They damaged stuff.
They definitely risked it. They damaged stuff.
Which Clark wouldn't do.
But is Clark Superman a good performer? Like, can he, like, step on a shovel and have it hit him and he, like, pretends to be hurt from it?
Yeah.
Or will he just, like, stand there and have it break on his face?
Like, he pretends to trip and he pushes you out of the way of a bus.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing.
Clark Kent. That would be good. It's like, he accidentally saves people, but he's also a superhero, you know?
Yeah, he's like Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. Or it's more like... I think that'd be interesting if it was Clark and not Superman. You know, it's like Clark trying to blend in, but he can't help be a superhero. He like slips on a banana peel and like catches a kid.
I like that. There was a Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster superhero called Funny Man.
Okay.
They created it. He was like, I think he's the first Jewish superhero. And it's funny because he's a comedian. And that's a very popular profession in LA amongst cool Jewish people.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. We should pitch that guy. It's public domain. We'll edit this out.
Yo, yeah.
Let's do this.
That's a good idea.
Let's make a new ad campaign with Funny Man.
Oh, man. That would help me so much. I'm trying to build a writing portfolio.
Oh, man.
For advertising, so this would be great.
I'll give you reference for Funny Man. He's pretty great.
Oh, beautiful.
Are you a fan of the Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster comics? Like, did you read the early stuff?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, you'd like it. You'd dig it.
Okay. Like when like Superman has like that funny S.
Yeah.
It's like really, yeah, okay.
A little easier to draw than the current one. Yeah, he fights like wife beaters and terrible landlords. It's really good.
Oh, man. Okay. That sounds awesome.
Heck yeah. I'm doing an ad right now for another comic.
You're way better at this than I am. You should do what I do.
I was a marketing guy for a comic book store for years.
Oh, that's cool.
For just one comic book store in Tucson, Arizona. This place, Heroes and Villains. I think they're on the web as like H&V Comics on most, on like Twitter and stuff.
Okay, that's cool.
They were really great. And I was their ad guy.
What did you have to do for them?
I would create events and then promote them in the city. I'd have like signings by people that were like locally relevant.
Or okay.
We did like Magic the Gathering and HeroClix and stuff. Yeah. And I created a brand identity. We called all of our customers heroes. And it was like, hey, heroes, stop on by. And it was like I tried to make it like a club atmosphere, like a Legion of Superheroes kind of like team up.
Oh,
club.
Yeah, that's cool.
We would do charitable stuff together. And it was really, really fun. I had to create a good community there.
That's awesome.
And I think that's what advertising is. It's creating a community.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's
definitely
like
what it is.
Sharing a culture. And it's not just like making kids smoke, which is most people, that's what most folks think.
Yeah. But definitely ads can be annoying.
What's your least favorite campaign?
Those O'Reilly tire ads. Like, O'Reilly.
But it's in your head, man.
I can't get it
it's
out.
It's stuck in there.
The problem is it's been the same thing for like 6 years, mm-hmm. 6+ years. And it's like, why? Can't you do something else? I'm sorry if the response right thing.
Yeah, yeah. All the ads this episode were O'Reilly.
I know. No. But that one's probably my least favorite. Or just like ads that aren't very creative. It's like medical ads. It's like, are you suffering from mesothelioma? And it's like, oh, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen in my life.
Put a character in there.
Yeah, give me a fox with a cape, please. Tell me about mesothelioma, please.
Via a super fox.
Super fox, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
There we go. That's another guy we can write together.
Man, we're on a roll.
Oh, boy.
So do you have any of your writing available for comics, like online yet or produced?
No, I don't. I just haven't written enough to feel good about publishing stuff.
I want to see that 9-panel poop comic.
Oh, God. You know, I do have it online. I'll send it to you.
Will you please send that to me and I'll put up with this podcast?
It's terrible.
Do it. Do it.
All right.
I'll give a quote for it. It'd be me and Moynihan giving pull quotes for a 1-page poop comic.
Oh, man. Those Skype sessions were so cool. He's like my favorite. And I was just like, you're my hero, please. And like, please be my friend. And
why did he Skype with you?
It was like a special on he has a Patreon.
Okay.
And it was like, oh, if you pay this amount of money, I'll like workshop your comics. And I was like, well, I'm like, I want to make comics. Will you like teach me? And he's like, yeah, I'll tell you what I know. Just like have some questions ready. And I was like, dope.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Did you ever read any of the comics ads like the Twinkies and Hostess?
Yes.
You should come back on. We'll do a follow-up episode about all those ads. You should pick like your 10 favorite ones.
Okay, that'll be good.
Because those were what you're saying too. They're creating a story.
Yeah.
Like there's some villains that appeared in there for the first time and they later popped up in other stuff. Like Dan Slott's Spider-Verse comic.
Yeah.
He had like the Hostess Spider-Man guy as one of the universes.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Man. I feel like, okay, I definitely like comic books. I consider myself a comic book guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm a comic book nerd. I feel like there's just so many gaps in all the things, comic books that I don't know about that I feel like I should. But I also recognize that it's so much media and so much to read that it's almost an impossible task.
That term is just made by ad people, right? To make you buy more stuff.
Okay.
Like when you feel that inadequacy, it's just because they're trying to sell you. Like you're not a real nerd unless you buy this hardcover graphic novel collection. That's just nonsense, right? Like anybody who likes comics is a comic fan.
Yeah.
And you don't need to read everything. You don't need to like stuff that, like, you don't need to read issues that you know you're not gonna like.
Yeah.
You don't need to read, if you don't like comics from the 30s, you don't have to read Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster stuff. You can just read 90s Superman and it's awesome, or modern day stuff. In my head, 90s was modern day. I'm gonna kill myself. I'm the oldest man there's ever been.
No, I will say this though, around 2006, I had like a Spider-Man encyclopedia.
Yeah.
So I read that front to cover. I mean cover to cover, front to back. So for like a brief moment in time, I was an expert in all things Spider-Man. It was right before Iron Spider, because that wasn't in the book.
Oh, okay.
But everything before that, I like knew, like the back of my hand.
That's pretty great. I bought the Superman equivalent of that because at my store, we used to argue over how to say Mixyuspidalic. And the official pronunciation was in that book. And I would be like, it's not Mixlipic, you idiot. And I would pull out this book and I would scream at five-year-olds in front of their moms.
You showed them all the phonetic letters. And you're like, this is how you say it.
Yeah. It's like, pronounce it in Kryptonian and the native Kryptonian.
Yeah. And then those five-year-olds were like, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, they're like, now I like comics forever.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Where's the soccer ball?
Yeah. I'm never coming here again.
Yeah, readings for dorks.
Is that why you don't work there anymore, Eric?
Yeah, because I was a bad marketing guy. That's how I marketed reading to kids.
Oh, those poor kids.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I was going to say every comic book nerd should have a bully, but.
Because then you have like a villain.
Yeah.
You can define yourself against someone, and that's always healthy.
And that's who you were for those kids.
Yeah. I was part of their origin story.
You
I killed
helped
all
them.
Of their uncles.
Yeah, yeah. As one should.
Yeah. Somebody had to.
Yeah.
That's the reverse Flash's thing, right? He's like, I want to make you a better Flash by killing all these other Flashes. Yeah.
I think he's my favorite villain.
Reverse Flash?
Yeah.
Do you call him Reverse Flash or Professor Zoom or Zoom?
I call him Reverse Flash because...
It's so lame sounding.
It is so lame, but... That's kind of the brilliance, is that, like, he's so terrifying that his name doesn't matter.
Why did they call him that? Reverse Flash is like calling Batman just Dark Knight.
Yeah.
That's super stupid.
It's because it was 4:30 on a Friday.
They just wanted to go home.
Everyone just wanted to go home.
But Zoom is cool. In a world where there's a guy called Flash, and you're like, that's cool, calling a guy Zoom is awesome.
Yeah. They were down to Anti-Flash or Reverse Flash.
Reverse Flash is the stupidest thing. Because, again, he's not slow. He doesn't run backwards.
Yeah, that's true.
He didn't burp out lightning. He was hit by it, too. Like, everything's the exact same thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's funny, because he's not, like, Bizarro, but he's not totally the opposite. I don't know, whatever. I don't know where I was going with that. But
the best character of all time.
Yeah. I'm glad we finally agree on something.
Yeah. We should make a Bizarro Seinfeld who, like, really understands airplane food.
Yeah.
And he really is in support of, like, 3-in-1 shampoo.
Well, there is that Bizarro Seinfeld episode where they have, like, the group of friends who are, like, the total opposite of them. And it's funny because the big difference is that they're considerate and they're nice and they're good people. So Seinfeld, what if, like, Seinfeld, we're following the villains?
Oh, man. It's like Earth 2, Crime Syndicate stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what would Bizarro Kevin be like?
He'd be like drunk Kevin. He wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, you're kind of shy for an advertiser guy and for a writer. You're kind of a shy dude. You're a very Clark Kent in person.
I feel like I don't always have a lot to say, so I'm like, I'll just be quiet.
Oh, man.
What else? He would be tall. and he would wear nothing but tank tops.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And be very tan.
I would hate that guy, frankly.
I would. Oh, I'm sure he'd be fun.
Yeah, the Bizarro concept's really fun. How every hero has like this dark double, like literally called Reverse Flash or like the Bizarro Seinfeld crew. And like, I feel like people give Superman credit for that, which is funny because mythologically there's always been dark doubles and opposites.
Like a foil.
Yeah, right? a foil. But like we just say Bizarro now instead of foil. And I love that. I love that comics has permeated culture so much that it's easier to say Bizarro than foil. It's hilarious.
What's Eric's, what's Reverse Eric?
Reverse Eric. He really thinks that Reverse Flash sounds like a great name.
It is a great name.
He thinks comic books are for kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He has a car. He has a good credit score. He calls his mom every week.
Wait, this sounds like reverse. This sounds like Bizarro Kevin too.
Yeah. He owns more than one pair of pants, and he's just boring at parties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the worst. He's the worst. Let's go kill that guy. Ready?
And his uncle.
Let's do it. Yeah. Where can folks, before we go kill our doppelgangers and become the highest versions of ourselves, achieve apotheosis, if you will, where are you online for nerds to find you?
Our nerds on Instagram. That's like the thing I use the most.
That's where the kids are. But you're 23, so you're a kid.
On Instagram, I am Sweet Boy Kev.
Sweet Boy?
Sweet.
Oh, Sweet Boy?
Sweet, yeah. I've had a string of really terrible Instagram names, and that was the best I could
explain Sweet Boy Kev to me.
PG-13. It is PG-13. I like wrote a list of words that I liked, mm-hmm. and I combined them and I put my name next to it, and I was like, I honestly, I did write it down. I just wrote, made a list. And I was like, this sounds like I can brand it, maybe. You did it.
What an ad man. Sweet boy, yeah. Kev. Are you on Twitter and all that stuff too?
I'm on Twitter, but I never use it. I don't know what my name is on there. Gotcha. It might be Mr. Kevin Alvarez. Maybe. I don't know.
I'm going to make folks find you on Instagram and then pitch you their comedian superhero crossover.
Yes, please.
Just constantly.
That would be perfect.
And you'll give the best one $100. Not me or Meltdown. Just you personally in cash. I'm committing you to this.
All right. Fine.
And on that note, I'm just kidding, everybody. Don't do that. Yeah. Up, up, and away.
Ooh, Super Friends with Eric Esquivel.